I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Monday, welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Great to be with you today. A little bit of a dreary fall-looking autumn day, but that's kind of what you expect in the middle of November. We are getting very close to Thanksgiving and certainly a lot to be thankful for. And one of those things, as you've probably noticed here quite a bit leading into this, is the economy. It seems to be on fire, and Stephen Moore has been helping us all year long keep up with this booming economy, and he joins us now, the chief economist at Heritage Foundation, Stephen Moore. Good to have you back on the show with us, Stephen.
Hi, Annie. Good to be with you. Every week I say things can't get better, and they keep getting better. So
yeah.
We now have an all-time high on the stock market again today. It's just amazing what's happened with the jobs numbers, the stock market, the inflation is at record low. We have 7 million surplus jobs. I mean, the left is really running out of things to complain about.
Yeah, it is amazing to see how well this economy is doing. And I wanted to get your opinion on this. I'm looking at a Fox Business article here. Stuart Varney suggests that the impending failure of Trump's impeachment might be a plus for your money. What do you think impeachment is going to do for the economy here in the United States, regardless of which way this heads?
Well, look, I don't think anyone, you know, who's half sensible thinks that this is going to lead to the ouster of the president. I think most people are kind of disgusted by this whole process. And, you know, I don't understand the Democrats, really. I think they just must be suffering from anti-Trump derangement syndrome, and they can't stop themselves from what a proceeding the proceedings of, you know, they should just, you know, if they want to censure the president, they should do that and get on with it. So do I think that the investors think that this is going to lead to impeachment? No. But I will tell you one thing that does worry me as an investor, and I'm surprised the markets are not kind of pricing this into the stock values, is that the possibility of a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren becoming president of the United States. That is extraordinarily frightening. I agree with you. You say that would cause up to 25% to 30%, you know, drop in stocks at the very minimum. Trillions and trillions of dollars of losses to retirement accounts and to individuals who own stock. And, you know, look, I don't think it's very probable that they are going to win, but one of them could win. And that would be, I mean, can you think of anything, Annie, that Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren has said that is good for the economy?
You know, I'm thinking about this, and when I listen to Elizabeth Warren talk, she's got her fists up, ready to fight the super hyper wealthy people in our country. She says, if you listen to her, she says it's just about the billionaires that are just going to have to give away, you know, two pennies or whatever she says. How do you respond to the idea that when she's talking to, you know, average regular people like me, that what Elizabeth Warren wants to do if she becomes president is only going to benefit me because I'm not super duper duper wealthy?
Well, look, a couple of things. I mean, first of all, since when is getting rich a sin in this country? You know, since when can we, you know, I find it very troubling that some of the entrepreneurs of our time, whether it's Bill Gates of, you know, Microsoft or Fred Smith of FedEx or Mike Zuckerberg, Facebook, or, you know, Warren Buffett, one of the great investors ever. You know, I could go on and on. These people are heroes. I mean, and by the way, I don't always agree with their politics. I don't like Mark Zuckerberg at all, but he's built a great company. And the idea that somehow people who've been successful, and by the way, think of all the millions of Americans who've been hired by these people. I mean, I laugh when I hear Elizabeth Warren saying, you know, we got to take these people down. They're hurting the country. I'm like, what has Elizabeth Warren ever done? I mean, really? I mean, all she's been a university professor and a politician. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why Americans voted for Trump is that he's a businessman and he knows how to run something. And he's a billionaire himself. And people said, gee, if he can, you know, make a billion in business, he could probably turn around the U.S. economy. And we were right.
Yep. Hey, Stephen, it's Ryan Wiggins. Pivoting to Hong Kong and the crackdown on the protests over the weekend, is that a part of the China negotiations with the tariffs at all?
I don't think it is. And by the way, I think those Hong Kong, dissidents, they the protesters, they deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, what they are doing is such an amazing stand. We stand with those protesters against the communists in China who are trying to take away their rights and their religious freedoms. And so I have nothing but admiration for them. And I know you guys feel the same. No, this is not really centrally part of the negotiations. It's really about economics. But I think it reminds Americans what a tyrant China is, that this is a communist country now. They are they violate human rights. They are cheating. They are stealing. We're in a new Cold War with China. And I think what's happened, and God, I hope I'm wrong about this, but if the Chinese move their People's Liberation Army into Hong Kong, I think it'll be a disaster for both China and Hong Kong. So I am worried about that.
Are we going to see like a phase one agreement? I mean, I know we keep kind of hearing that it's close. Are we going to see that soon with China and Trump?
Yeah, I do. I think we are going to see that deal. I mean, you never know with the Chinese. I mean, I never say that it's going to happen with certainty because the Chinese, they don't keep their word. These are people, I'm talking about the Chinese government, not the Chinese people, but the leaders in Beijing. And, so many times we've been close to getting a deal with them over the last 3 years, and then at the last minute they pull back. So I do think we're going to get this deal, but I wouldn't bet my life on it. I think that, I wouldn't be surprised if they, at the last minute, pulled out of that agreement. By the way, China's getting crushed by these tariffs. That's the story that nobody in the media is covering. Mm-hmm. And they're losing factories. They're losing jobs. A lot of these factories are moving to India and to Singapore and to Vietnam to get around the tariffs. So it's in China's economic self-interest to get this deal done, but you just never know with the leaders in Beijing what they're going to do next.
We're speaking with Stephen Moore, the chief economist at the Heritage Foundation, also author of a book, Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. You kind of mentioned something earlier that struck up a question in my mind. When you look at the president as a businessman who's made tons and tons and tons of money, and you look at the divide between politicians who are lawyers and politicians who are businessmen, oftentimes you see the Republicans or the businessmen, they're in the business of making jobs for other people and understanding economically how that benefits the greater good. Whereas lawyers, if they tend to be on the Democratic side, they want to make a lot of laws. They want to make a lot of regulation. And it seems to be a diametrical opposition that we have in the Oval Office right now. Somebody who understands business and what's good for the economy overall.
Well, that's, why Trump's whole theme of putting America first and putting American businesses and American workers first. And by the way, American businesses and American workers have similar interests, right? I mean, why is it so hard for liberals like Elizabeth Warren to understand that when American businesses do well and American employers do well, American employees do well? I mean, is it really that hard to connect the dots between those two things? Elizabeth Warren seems to think that when businesses do better, workers do worse. I mean, how many businesses are going bankrupt? Hire workers. It's only successful businesses that hire workers. And so I agree with you. I think this framework, the mindset of Donald Trump is let's help American businesses be the most competitive businesses in the world because we are in a global economy. We're competing against Mexico and Canada and Europe and China. We want to make sure their jobs stay here in America, that they don't go overseas. And Trump has done a great job of that. We've created, here's another statistic here, almost 1.5 million construction, manufacturing, and mining jobs since Trump took office. And remember, it was Obama who said, how is he going to bring those jobs back with a magic wand? Mm-hmm. Well, they're back.
Yeah, that's a magic wand he's got there, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
when you look at the candidates that are on the left, in the Democratic primary now, and they're going to get ready to face off here as the caucuses and primaries take place, do you see anybody in that race for the Democratic side who has moderate economic policies that you think wouldn't cause as drastic of a decline as an Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders?
Look, it's clear that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are the most left and most anti-business. But almost all of them have said, they're going to shut down fracking, for instance. you think that's going to go over well in Pennsylvania and Ohio and New Mexico and Oklahoma and North Dakota and Texas, where, you know, and the shale gas is so important? Almost all of them want a Green New Deal. Almost all of them want Medicare for all. So I see gradations, but I think the Democratic message of the party now is Green New Deal, Medicare for all, redistribute income, raise taxes. So I guess the answer is no. I'm afraid of all of them.
Well, we've got a budget that needs to be signed here. Assuming we're going to have another continuing resolution that takes place, we haven't signed the USMCA quite yet. So a lot of economic decisions that should be being made by those members of
Congress. Well, how can they move forward with those things like passing a budget or doing an infrastructure bill or fixing our immigration system or any of that when they're so tied up with impeachment?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I mean, all they want to talk about is removing this president. Can you think of a single thing tossing this stuff back to you, Eddie, but can you think of a single piece of legislation that has passed under Nancy Pelosi's, tenure as speaker that's been good for the economy?
Well, and, they don't champion it either, because if it's good for the economy and they participate in it, then it's good for Trump and it's Trump bad. So even if it were something that happened, I don't think that they'd want to champion it, because then they'd have to share some credit.
They don't want the economy to grow. That's right. That's why, remember, we talked about this a few weeks ago on your show. You know, the Democrats and the media were rooting for a recession, right? They wanted a recession. Remember, by the way, I'm looking all over the place right now. I'm looking under my chair. I'm looking out the window. I'm looking out down the hall. I don't see a recession anywhere. Do you?
No, not yet.
where is that recession they've been talking about? I mean, we got 7 million surplus jobs, and they're talking about a recession? I mean, lowest unemployment rate, and they're talking about recession? They are rooting against the American economy and the American worker. And, you know, I just find that to be hard to defend.
Yeah.
Indefensible.
If you do find that recession under your chair, please let the Andy Fry Show know first.
It's funny, this morning.
I'm looking all over for it.
Steve, this morning I was looking, this isn't necessarily a question, but you're right. At CBS News, I looked at a report this morning that was just about the economy, and the only thing they could focus on was how hard it's been on businesses because they can't find enough workers. And that's the
problem or what?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And by the way, as you guys know, I was the senior economic advisor to Trump with Larry Kudlow and my best friend. And, when we put together that plan, the tax cuts, the deregulation, the pro-America energy, we wanted to create a tight labor market. We wanted workers to have more bargaining power with employers, and they've got it. You know, this has been working. I saw the president a couple weeks ago, and I just joked to him. I said, Mr. President, this is working better than even I thought it would.
I'm sure he knew that it would work this well. He's probably had the confidence in these policies. One last question before I let you go. I was just curious. I know that you have an Illinois tie here. Have you been watching some of the FBI investigations that have been taking place and the corruption that's been kind of rooted out here so far in Illinois?
I'm from Illinois.
Oh, man, I think we lost him.
Ah, right when it was going to get really juicy.
Well, we're going to talk to Amy Cordy at 2 o'clock, who's going to give us the details on it. I have this printout. That Stephen Moore there. He's such a good guest. And I wish that he had his connection a little bit better. It is what it is.
It's amazing. The stuff he's talking about really is, the numbers are amazing. And that's without deals like the USMCA being signed.
There's a lot of huge things hanging out there.
Or anything with China. We're talking about a phase one with China, and people just on the speculation that deal might be signed. We're hitting new highs with the Dow every week. So can you imagine going into his possible second term if some of these deals start to land?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know if he wins again, they will. Because there will be nothing else to wait for. How much more the economy is even going to grow since then?
I have 9 pages printed out right here from the Illinois Policy website, illinoispolicy.org. It's the 2019 Illinois Corruption Tracker. 9 printed pages. And we were supposed to talk about this last week with Illinois Policy, but the impeachment got in the way. Tell me about it. And so we are going to go through at 2 o'clock. If you are in Illinois, if you love someone who's in Illinois, that includes me, you are going to want to hear this, because there was an announcement this weekend, I think it was this weekend, that the Senate President, John Cullerton, is resigning in January of 2020.
Ooh.
That's a big deal, folks. What is that about? We'll talk about it at 2 o'clock. but your phone calls when we come back. 314-241-9797. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the Andy Fry Show. I'm just kind of wondering if Ryan's going to let it fly here in a minute. Do you need to? Look, he's grooving.
I only do the girl part.
Facebook.com/Andy Fry Show. Facebook Live.
Why am I not surprised?
What are you doing with your shoulders right now?
This is bobbing. Called dancing.
Oh. It's hard to tell sometimes.
Bobbing back and
watch
forth.
Watch it now.
That looks like 1980s aerobics.
It does.
That's what dancing is to me.
Hit this guy in spandex.
There's nothing. No.
That's not the first time I've heard that today.
Aerobics gear.
Okay, Ryan keeps walking around and repeating the word trampoline, and I don't know what he's talking about.
There's a pop song.
There
that's
seems
great.
To be some sort of cultural relevance to it, which I am not in on. And I think that Ryan and I are now in a constant competition to see who is more out of touch.
No,
right now I'm winning, but I think that's just for a brief moment.
That no, I'm more out of touch than
sing
you.
Sing for the people what you've been singing.
Trampoline by Shade. Is that right? Shade. Shade.
No, sing.
Trampoline. I got a trampoline.
I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Katie's going to pull it up for us.
And Katie says, or Ryan starts singing something about a trampoline, and Katie starts giggling like she's in on the joke.
Well, she
and
knows.
I'm not in on the joke.
She knows the song I was trying to get at.
Which is amazing. But she got something
close,
out of that.
Well, there's an ad first, but
yeah,
how close I got to that song.
He said he comes into the office before, and he said, I just heard my favorite song out on outside, and I go, what is it? And then you did what?
I said, this. I sang exactly this, note for note.
Jumping on a trampoline. This is not what it sounded like when you did it. All right, turn that off. Now you sing.
I literally
knew
the song was called Trampoline.
Turn it back up.
And I couldn't remember the melody. So I was just going, Trampoline. Trampoline. See? I was so close.
All right, turn that off, Ryan.
Trampoline, trampoline.
Yeah, but you just kept repeating trampoline. There were zero other words. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking the young people in our culture right now are being highly underserved.
No,
if that's
they're not.
A song.
No, that's a terrific song, and I'm glad really that good. You referenced it because I want it to get played as much as possible because it's fantastic and it's called Trampoline.
You need to learn more of the
Shade words.
By who?
Shade.
I don't actually know how to pronounce this artist's name either, but I will tell you that when Ryan first approached me and said, I really like this song, and it goes like, trampoline, trampoline. Yeah. I'm like, I know exactly what song
it's exactly
they're singing.
What my 3-year-old Evelyn would do.
I knew one word, and I couldn't remember the melody of the song.
But I knew what it was.
But I got it. That's
Evelyn
all
would
you
walk
needed.
Around. She'd hear that song once, and then for the rest of the entire day, she would just walk around singing trampoline.
Oh man, I know my kids do the same thing, except that they'll do it with like limericks. That's probably a bad example because those are usually dirty. But
what?
Stuff like...
do you have lots of limericks laying around the house?
Give us an example so we don't think that.
Okay. So like you can pick your nose and you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your friend's nose. You ever heard that?
Yeah.
So they learned that one day.
It's so cute.
And then for like 2 weeks...
That's cute.
They
you
just
need to have children.
Kept so cute. Saying it and laughing every single time.
Do you... Okay. So this is how I do this. Mother of three. This happened multiple times this weekend. At one point, I thought, I think this weekend's lasting a little too long.
I did too.
Was it weird?
You go back
yes.
But,
to work.
But like, your kids are being, they're kids. So I'm saying this is normal behavior for them. And they're being a little bit of obnoxious. And as a parent or as a grandparent, you have developed an ability to turn it off in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a point where you realize that other people who are not around your children as much probably don't have that. Like, they've been hearing this. And then you think to yourself, how long has this been going on? How long have I? And you go from, like, just not even addressing the fact that said annoying behavior is happening to, what are you doing? You need to be quiet. Like, you turn into a crazy person because in your head you've traveled this journey. But to your poor little children who have just been being kids, you've been... You've gone to a place in your brain where you are okay with
the noise,
the existence that is your life, and it's a peaceful place. And then you're jolted out of that, and on the surface, for other people viewing this progression, it's very jolting. In your mind, you've traveled a distance.
Mm-hmm.
I did that a couple times this weekend, where I went from like not even addressing the fact that said behavior is happening to ragey.
No, that's a great point. Because
Quiet.
Any one of those moments, if you just took them as a moment of themselves, they're like, oh, that's cute. That one little thing that they did was cute. But they've been doing it all day.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I should be acknowledging that this is a great phase and that that was a cute little thing, but I'm real tired of it.
Can't handle it
anymore. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And the questions, too, like, and they're real questions, but I just get so frustrated. Like, don't put candy corn in your nose. Okay, can I put regular corn in my nose? And it's supposed to be funny.
To go in there.
Yeah.
Oh, don't
it's like,
bring
no,
me over to that.
You can't put regular corn in your nose either. Okay, what about this? Don't put anything in your nose. And by the time you get to that question,
back to candy corn.
You're mad.
Yeah. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is talking right now. He's addressing reporters. And we are going to pull that up for you when we come back from a break here in a little bit. We're not going to go to break quite yet. But we want it appears as though there is some news that could be being made right now. So we want to bring that to you in its entirety. And I want to remind you, too, that at 2:10, maybe even a little earlier than that, 2:05, I am going to address this 9-page document that I'm holding in my hand right now. It's a 2019 Illinois Corruption Tracker. We've talked about this, and I've had people ask me, I've had people call the show, I've had people that I meet say, you know, what's going on? Is something going to happen? I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't want to bore you with the details leading up to, like, people you've never heard about that are in Chicago, and, oh, Chicago's got corruption? Stop the presses. Rip everything else out of the Annie Fry show so we can cover the fact that Chicago has corruption. However, the investigations that are federal investigations are swarming around one Mike Madigan. Have they got him yet? I don't think that they have him yet. But the people who are being involved in these investigations are very close to Mike Madigan. And I think that that's the number one thing that we need to, as a state of Illinois, do is root out the corruption that exists here and then figure out what we have to do in the aftermath of rooting out that corruption. So there are federal investigations that are taking place. According to this Illinois policy article, Illinois is the second most corrupt state in the nation, according to the University of Illinois Chicago. Well, that's saying something that they admitted that. And corruption costs the state economy at least $550 million a year.
But unbelievable.
But the size and scope of government corruption is nothing new for Illinoisans. Well, that's for sure. If you were to ask a downstate Illinois resident what the number one problem with the state is, they'd all say Chicago.
Oh yeah, I've got very, very liberal film industry friends in Chicago who hate the politics of Illinois because they know it's corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
They know every time they put a dollar into a parking meter, 90% of it's going to somebody of somebody's that they shouldn't have to be paying.
Yeah, here's the state Senate President Tom Cullerton. No, that's not Tom Cullerton. I think that might be his son. 41 counts, federal indictment in August. Alleged Cullerton pocketed around $275,000 in salary and health benefits from the Teamsters for a do-nothing job. Pleaded not guilty. That sounds, well, yeah. Also, disclosure of his charges came soon after the Teamsters chief, John Coley, pleaded guilty to extortion charges. He's a distant cousin of Senate President John Cullerton. Now, John Cullerton is the one he's the leader of the Senate in the state of Illinois, so the state Senate, and he is the one who has announced his resignation as of January of 2020. Following the indictment, Senate President John Cullerton removed Tom as the chairman of the Senate Labor Committee and named him chairman of the Senate Veteran Affairs Committee. So as long as you're connected, you might get shuffled mm-hmm. around. The parts are all the same. They just get rearranged. So that is one of the most interesting of the people who have been caught in the crosshairs of these federal investigations. So stick around. If you've been interested in what is going on with these, we're going to get the lowdown from Amy Cordy of the Illinois Policy Institute here at 2:10. When we come back, we're going to find out the announcement that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is weighing in on. He's talking about Hong Kong. He's talked about Israel. Lots of things coming out of this, and we will have that for you as soon as we return. Stick around. Back in a minute. So Mike Pompeo speaking there about some very prominent foreign policy issues, as the State Department is apt to do. And they're like, so about impeachment, what can you tell us about the way that the people who are part of the State Department are being treated? Blah, blah. He's like, nope, not having it.
No, thank you.
One of the first things that he addressed there, Mike Pompeo, this is a summary from an Axios report, announces U.S. will no longer view Israeli settlements as illegal. According to Axios, this move is an important shift because it cancels a legal position held by the United States State Department since 1978, when the Carter administration determined that the settlements were a violation of international law. On the other hand, the move is mostly symbolic and will have no practical implications. The Trump administration didn't see the settlements as illegal, and this decision today will simply make it a more formal position.
Yeah, it's been international law that's been kind of at the center of that. The international law kind of would take cases, and they'd pass judgments, and then nothing would really get done because Israeli courts had already been deciding these cases. And so the blanket statement there was basically that Mike Pompeo was saying, let's just trust the Israeli courts because that's where things are actually getting done anyway, and we're not going to defer to international law. He also referenced China in there and the unrest and violence, he said, cannot be addressed by law enforcement alone, and that the Chinese Communist Party must honor its commitment to the Hong Kong people. That's not really news. He was just sort of, I think, addressing it and saying that they stand with Hong Kong.
One of the things that he said in the initial Israel settlements piece there, he dropped the R word, Reagan. We agree with President Reagan that the settlements are not inconsistent with international law. So a bit of politics there for sure. Yeah, interesting. I don't know if that State Department, I don't think we had a tip that was going to go. It just started kind of happening.
Yep.
What do you make of the stuff about Bill Taylor and Yovanovitch? That keeps getting brought up, and I think a question was even asked of Pompeo there, that Yovanovitch is testifying, but then Bill Taylor was the one that replaced Yovanovitch, and then he's also testifying.
Mm-hmm.
And Republicans keep saying, look at that as evidence that there was nothing wrong going on.
Yeah, why would you replace one person who you didn't trust in a specific instance with another person who you
apparently don't trust if you're trying to...
Yeah, in the event that the narrative that the Democrats are laying out... I mean, it seemed to me that what I gathered from the testimony last... Not the testimony, the questioning, honestly, was that there is a lot of corruption that takes place in Ukraine. Everybody can agree on that. I mean, if you're Ukraine... Like, you're the punching bag of last week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about how crappy the Ukraine is, which is interesting because I would point you to an interview we did maybe 3-4 weeks ago with Congressman John Shimkus, who came on the show because, and I had seen this editorial that he had written. He has been to Ukraine multiple times, and he talks about how wonderful the Ukraine is and the direction that they're headed right now, how they are a very important and needed ally to the United States and how they are making great change in the Ukraine. So to try to use where we are right now as an opportunity to just sling mud as much as we can at Ukraine, which is, I think, collateral damage from what the Democrats are trying to effect with President Trump. But to suggest that it's so corrupt there that Ambassador Yovanovitch knew that the corruption was taking place and that it would be hard for people to try to sneak back around some sort of efforts to participate in that corruption, or that Yovanovitch would call it out, that Trump couldn't participate in what he wanted to participate in if Yovanovitch was present.
Mm.
So it's like we all agree on how corrupt this place was,
mm-hmm.
but we also... I mean, boy, are we giving Zelensky zero credit. He ran a campaign, mirrored off, in his own words, if you read the transcript, which was, as you've heard, perfect, that Zelensky did what he did in his campaign, modeled after Trump, and he won. They love each other. Mm-hmm. They're bros. Doesn't it matter what Zelensky says at all? That was a question that was asked in the hearing. Like, are you saying that Zelensky's a liar? Multiple times.
Yep. They did ask that.
He's come out and said over and over and over again, this is the case. And it's just, it falls on deaf ears because it doesn't fit the side of the story. We are two different parties shouting as loud as we can in a room at each other and nobody's listening. Everybody's yelling. It's really noisy. Let's talk to Amy Cordia, the Illinois Policy Institute, when we come back. She's going to walk us through the nearly 30 lawmakers, businesses, and public officials that have been questioned in this corruption investigation in the state of Illinois. Amy joins us when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.